This week, we're continuing a series of sketches on Spokane City Council candidates. We're now on District 1, which includes Hilliard, the Logan neighborhood near Gonzaga, and part of East Central. This is an interview with me, Rebecca White, and candidate Jonathan Bingle. He's one of three candidates running for Spokane City Council in District 1. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. You can find more City Council interviews on SpokanePublicRadio.org. All right. Well, thank you for taking a few minutes out of your morning to talk to me.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, the first question I'm trying to ask every candidate, which I think I've asked you this before several years ago, is just tell me a little bit about yourself and why you are running for City Council.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, born and raised in Northeast Spokane. I went to Rogers High School. The home that my wife and I currently occupy is, you know, less than a minute away from the home that I grew up in. And when we were looking around where we wanted to live in Spokane, you know, there wasn't even a question. This was our home, and so this is where we established ourselves. But after high school, I went to college, and while I was in college, I realized I didn't want to work for anybody, so I started my own business, and that was an events and entertainment business, and we've owned that for 11 years. And just recently, my wife and I started a new business because, you know, with the pandemic, our business, you know, wasn't one that was socially responsible. And so we were shut down, and we remain shut down quite a bit until, you know, the phases move on. So I became a general contractor about 8 months ago, and I'm running for City Council in the Northeast because I just think it's such a tremendous place to live. I love this neighborhood. I want to make sure that we receive the advocacy required to improve the areas of Spokane that most desperately need it. I want to make sure that we can see some economic development coming into the Northeast to where we can start to bring opportunity within reach for many in my district. I want to make sure that public safety remains a focus of the community, that the police know that they are not going to have to worry about funding, that we can properly take care of the community by keeping a strong presence here. You know, housing for us is a major issue. And so I want to make sure that in our district, we have enough housing across the spectrum, not just a particular type of housing, but all housing, because Spokane needs all of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my first question relates to the economy. You know, our local economy, as well as, you know, everywhere in the country, has been hit pretty hard by the pandemic, and our economic landscape might look a little bit different coming out of it. What should our city be doing to help our community recover? And are there things in the future they could be doing to spur economic development going forward?
Yeah, so one of the things I would like to see the city focus on, and one of the things I would focus on if I were elected, is you know, making sure that any federal aid that is coming in through the rescue plan, or the money that's still allocated from the CARES Act, making sure that we are identifying and targeting businesses and industries that were hit hardest by the pandemic. And I can understand this maybe better than most because, again, my wife and I, we owned an events and entertainment business. And we were fully shut down for the better part of a year. And now that things are opening up a little bit more, you know, you can have 50% capacity of bars and restaurants. Our business will be able to resume here shortly. So being somebody who understands, you know, the shutdowns and how they've affected small business more than most, I would like to make sure that the city focuses on directing the aid toward those businesses and industries that were hit hardest. And we have tens of millions of dollars that's going to be coming in. That's going to be welcome relief and welcome aid for many small businesses, restaurants, entertainment venues. And I would like to make sure that we focus on those. That's in the short term. In the long term, in the Northeast, we have an incredible opportunity with our public development authority that's been established in the Northeast, which is located directly on top of a qualified opportunity zone. Which is a, you know, the federal opportunity zones that have been established that give incredible tax benefits to businesses that are wanting to invest in those areas. And so for the business, they're going to receive tax benefits. For the city and for the area, for my area, what we would find is the city and the county have partnered on this public development authority to make sure that 75% of increased tax revenues go directly back into the communities where those taxes are being generated. And so we would see, better utilities, we would see better roads, which are things that we desperately need in the Northeast. So in the short term, making sure that CARES Act dollars that haven't been spent are going to the right place, the most recent relief funds that have come in, making sure that they're going to the right place, to where businesses don't fail as a result of the pandemic. And then in the long term, making sure that we can find some businesses and industries to invest in the Northeast.
And I think that answers most of my questions there. Another area I'm trying to, talk to every candidate about is homelessness. It was already a pretty significant issue in our community before the pandemic. And now that there's been all of this economic hardship, eventually an eviction moratorium is going to end and some aid programs could run out. What should our city be doing to improve our shelter system so it's prepared for our community's evolving needs?
Yeah, well, I think you asked a lot of questions there, and so I think I'd like to break them down as we go along. So with the eviction moratorium ending, we have a lot of people who, again, through no fault of their own, found themselves in a position where they lost their job because, their industry was shut down. 50% of people who live in the, it's around 50%, it's not exactly 50%, but about 50% of the people who live in the Northeast work in the service industry. And the service industry was one of those that was hit pretty hard by the pandemic and by the, lockdown policies of the state and federal government. And so we had a lot of people who lost their income. And then when, unemployment funds ran out or became less than what they needed to survive, they got behind on bills. Thankfully, again, through some programs that have been passed at the federal level, there is rent aid and aid for landlords that are coming into the city. And so the city, and they are doing this, and they're doing a good job of this, making sure that that those dollars go to make sure that we aren't having a mass eviction that takes place because people were too far behind on their bills. So that's something that the city should be focusing on. I know that the Landlords Association, the Tenants Association, those are all people that are working together to make sure that people aren't losing their homes to where we don't have an increase in those who are temporarily homeless. Now, there's a difference in temporarily homeless and the chronically homeless. And in the chronically homeless, one of the things that we find that there is overwhelming addiction and mental illness in that group. And when people talk about homeless, this is often what they're talking about are the chronically homeless. And I think that the city and the state and the federal government for the last 30 years, with really great intentions, have focused on making sure that people weren't without housing, that they had shelter. And I know that that is something that people, again, with very good hearts and very good intentions, wanted to make sure that people obviously weren't freezing out on the street in December. And that's commendable, and I appreciate that. I think one of the problems with the focus of the federal government for at least the last 12 years has been that they've been treating a human problem as a housing problem. And with our chronically homeless, what we find is they're not homeless just because, they ran out of money. With the chronically homeless, what we find is that they're homeless because they have human problems such as addiction and mental illness. And that's not the entire population, but it's a vast majority of the population of chronically homeless find themselves in that situation. And while our relentless pursuit of housing first policies has helped people to not go without shelter, it hasn't addressed the underlying issues in their cells. So what I would like to see from the city is I would like to see us, with the federal dollars that are coming in, those have to be allocated to housing first policies, and we should continue to do that. Any extra monies that the city is committing to the homelessness situation, they should be committing towards treatment first programs that work on rehabbing the individual, addressing the underlying issues of addiction or mental illness to help rehab the individual and get them back into society as the best that they can be to help them live their best lives. We can't neglect treatment first programs. And I think we have, good organizations doing both of those in Spokane. I would just like to see a better balance between housing first and treatment first programs in Spokane.
Is a way the city would do that would be like partnering more with like the UGM or asking Catholic Charities to provide a little bit more treatment first options? Or I guess how would you approach making sure that happens?
Yeah, so we have treatment first programs. Would be UGM is a treatment first program. So is places like Adult and Teen Challenge. So we have a lot of organizations in town that are treatment first, making sure that they rehab the individual. So partnering with those organizations, I think, is a terrific idea. They have incredible success that they've found by focusing on the individual. And I would like to see from the Catholic Charities, I would like to see a more emphasis on, okay, we're getting you in off of the streets. There are, I know that with Catholic Charities being a low barrier or a no barrier shelter to receive federal aid, they can't require certain things. But I would like to see in our low barrier and no barrier shelters a better success rate of helping people to transition out of addiction, because what the national studies have shown that housing first policies aren't helping to rehab the individuals. They're just helping to move homelessness off of the streets and into a shelter.
And so, you know, one issue that you did sort of mention earlier, affordable housing, it is a crisis here in Spokane, and it's been for a while. And it's both, you know, actually purchasing a house. I think recently that's gotten a lot farther away for a lot of people. And then there's also the rental issue, that there is, you know, a lot less rentals available and they're a lot more expensive. Do you have some sort of policy approaches where you might look for ways to address those two growing issues?
Yes. So I've been working with a bunch of organizations here in town to potentially address the cost of owning a new home. So what I would like to see in my district is I would like to see a lot more transition from renting into home ownership, because we know that home ownership does a lot for the community. It makes communities safer because you have neighbors that know each other and have lived next to each other for a long time. They're looking out for each other. It makes communities safer in that vein. It helps to increase the stability for children, instead of children moving from school system to school system because they're moving from rental to being able to stay in the same place for a long time, stay in the same school system, stay in the same friend group for their entire lives, to where they have more stability, which helps them to become more successful in their lives. And also it helps communities that may have been experiencing generational poverty or have experienced generational poverty for a while. Most new businesses are begun through home equity lines of credit. Somewhere around 80% of new businesses are funded through home equity lines of credit. And so for people of us that own a home, as we've watched the equity in our home increase quite drastically over the last few years, we know that there's a lot more money that's available to us to go off and start a new business if we'd like to. So transitioning people from renting into home ownership is a great step, both for the community and the individuals who are transitioning. Now, as you have mentioned, home ownership has become less attainable for people. And every $1,000 that the average income or the average home price goes up, another 200 individuals have just been priced out of the market. It's something like 76% of Spokane through the last few years has become priced out of the market because the average home prices have increased so much. What I would like to see is, we've been working with organizations to see if we could establish things like a land trust, to where available land that is undeveloped in Spokane could be given from the city into this land trust. And then developers can develop on it, and they would develop not only market housing, but they would also develop some low-income housing, affordable housing options in these same areas. What ends up happening is that instead of, purchasing a new home for $310,000, they don't also have to purchase the land. And so now you've taken a $50,000 or $60,000 expense off the cost of a brand new home. So instead of it being $310,000, you've just lowered it to about $250,000, which is more within the range of what our people can afford, as opposed to, over $300,000. Policies like that are policies that I would pursue to make sure that keeping the dream of home ownership, which is a fantastic first step in ending generational poverty, alive, especially in my community where we have some of the poorest zip codes in the state.
And so for, one thing, just a follow-up question, your predecessor, Kate Burke, was really sort of involved in was tenancy and rentals and hosting kind of open houses. Is there things that you would do to maybe advocate for renters or for rental housing availability that maybe might continue some of that work, or at least looking out for renters as well?
I think the best way to advocate for rental availability is to allow more development. Right now, we're not allowing development of what Spokane has dubbed the missing middle, and we need lots of intro-level market housing. We need lots more duplexes and fourplexes. We need lots more of all kinds of housing, low-income, affordable. We need all kinds of new housing. And what ends up happening is that if we have the proper supply to meet the demand, then you don't have an improper balance one way or the other. We've got to make sure that the supply exists to make sure that our community has the best chance possible to find a rental that works for them, or a new home that works for them, or an old home that works for them. Right now we have great demand, and I think it's terrific. I think it's absolutely amazing. Spokane, as we all know, I mean, we've chosen this to be our home. You and I, Rebecca, obviously have chosen this to be our home, and it's because it's such a wonderful place. And now that other people are starting to realize how great it is, they're wanting to move here, and that's terrific for the community. The problem is that we aren't meeting the demand, and that's what we have to do. At a city level, we have to find whatever ways are necessary to allow development, allow it now, not just density. While density will play a big part of that, we need to build up. We need to build up quickly. We also need to be allowed to build out to meet the needs of you know, the people in our community.
And so one of my next questions I'm trying to talk to every candidate is about, if you're elected to city council, you know, you may be in a position to negotiate or at least vote on a police contract. And so we just had one that the city council unanimously approved, and later this year they're going to be in talks about another one. Do you think our police department needs more transparency and oversight? And if you had a say in the contract in the future, would you advocate for that?
Any government agency that exists should be incredibly transparent to the community, because the community are the owners. The community is what funds the government. Things in government should not be a secret. Okay, if I'm a taxpayer, if you are telling me that I have to pay you a certain amount of money, I'm willing to pay those taxes. I also want to understand what my money is going to. When it comes to collective bargaining, there must be incredible transparency. The people of the community must understand what their elected officials are negotiating on their behalf, because while it may be very good, it could also be very bad. We need to understand exactly what's being negotiated, how it's being negotiated, what promises are being made. And that's not just with the police. That's with any organization here in town. Anything that deals with the government should be incredibly transparent.
And so with the big sticking point in this contract in the past and probably going forward is the police ombudsman that Spokane voted to have overlook the police. And I know that there were some things in the contract that made people uncomfortable, that it gives the police union some say over what the ombudsman's allowed to say about some of those situations that a police officer, like use of force, for example. Is that something that if you were a city council member, you might advocate for the ombudsman to have a little bit more power and more ability to do those types of things?
I think that that citizens should always have oversight over any government program. I think the ombudsman program is a good program. I think that it should continue. It should continue to have it should be as independent as it can be.
One other issue I'm trying to bring up with every city council member that I talk to is the environment as well. Our city council right now has in several ways tried to address the environment through water usage or tree planting programs. If you become a city council member, would you want to look into environmental justice issues or encourage stewardship or these types of programs? Or do you feel like this is something that's a little bit outside the city's purview and what it really should be trying to control?
I was always taught that when you leave a place, you leave it better than when you found it. And that's the attitude that I would take into any environmental policies that I'm a part of at the city. I want to make sure that our river is cleaner than when we found it. I want to make sure that our trees are stronger and healthier than before I was here. And I think that the city has taken good strides in making sure that we're taking care of the environment in the ways that we can. Our waste treatment, our water facilities, the things that we're doing right now, I think are good, and I think we should continue in those ways. I would certainly advocate to make sure that the earth is better than when we found it.
And I'm getting up towards my last question that I have, but before I do, is there any sort of specific policy that you're really focused on that I didn't ask about or you want to elaborate on?
I think you've hit, a lot of the big ones, a lot of the, as I've been out doorbelling, a lot of the issues that you're bringing up are issues that I hear at the door. And so I think they're the big ones that the community cares about.
Well, my last question is, compared to your two opponents, why are you the best fit for your district?
Well, like I said, I mean, I've lived in this district my entire life. I've gone through the systems in this district, going to Rogers High School, going to Arlington, going to Gary. I mean, I've lived in this community my whole life. I have experienced all of the issues that this community has, and I've seen the great potential realized. I've seen some great issues. And so because of my history in this community, I think that I have a better understanding of what it needs than my opponents. Being somebody who's been a renter and a landlord, I understand what it's like to be on both sides. Somebody who's been an employee and an employer, I understand what it's like to sign both sides of the check. And so when it comes to advocating for any particular group, I believe that I have the ability to be a great advocate because I have experienced both sides of most issues. And for those reasons, I think that I'm a better fit than my candidates. Not that they're bad people or that, they wouldn't do a fine job as well. I just think that I have the ability to do a better job.
Well, I think that was most of the questions I have. Thank you for taking some time to talk to me.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate you. Thank you to, Spokane Public Radio for having me. Thank you to your listeners for giving me their ear for, the amount of time that we've had. I really appreciate you having me.